This is Rabbi Josh Yoder of the Stanton Street Shul. Thank you for downloading this class podcast. These classes are provided free of charge through the generosity of the Stanton Street Shul community and supporters like you. If you do enjoy them, please consider making a donation to our synagogue's building fund on our website's shop donate page at www.stantonstshul.com.
Good morning, everyone. It is Sunday, May 11th. It is fantastic to be back. We haven't done this in a while. Between Pesach, me being away for a couple of weeks, it's nice to be back. Unfortunately, for so many reasons, it just feels like a complete disaster because, as you hear, I'm trying to get over a cold that's more annoying than anything else. I couldn't actually find my Rambam because my apartment's a mess, and my printer's telling me I need to replace the drum. Fortunately, we're going a bit out of order, and that was kind of by design. The reason being, we last left off, as I recall, the middle of chapter 12. Now, normally Maimonides, as we've been going through so far with the laws of Shabbat, goes topic by topic, but he'll sometimes include multiple topics in one chapter. The topic that we're intentionally skipping, or I won't say skipping entirely, but skipping around in, is the laws of carrying. Because it's hard to discuss the laws of carrying. It's a huge subset in Jewish law regarding the laws of Shabbat, and it's hard to know exactly where to begin. Going through straight Rambam, I don't think would be entirely clear for people, because I think that before you get to carrying, you have to know what exactly are domains and stuff like that. So what we're going to do today is at least go over Maimonides' definitions for domains and what these domains are. These are very important to know, especially before we get to the acts of carrying. We're not going to do every single halacha, but we'll try to give an overview about the laws of carrying according to Rambam. Again, skipping around a bit, covering the basics. If anyone is interested on specifically Eruvin, we have a three-part series that discusses the laws of Eruvin and how those work. We're not really going to focus on the Eruvin now. We're only going to focus on carrying. The first of many T's. Okay. So, first thing to know, some of you might be familiar with this. There are four domains regarding Shabbat. All right. Anyone want to remember what they are? If anyone's interested, Rambam discusses these not in chapter 12, but rather in chapter 14. And he goes through some of these halachot. So it's really a combination of what we're focusing on here is Rambam's Laws of Shabbat, chapter 14, halachot 1, 4, and 7. All right. So the big ones, it comes to four, but the two big ones that come up the most often are the Reshut HaRabim and the Reshut HaYachid. Reshut HaRabim being the public domain, Reshut HaYachid being the private domain. A third category is a Karmelit, which is a rabbinic invention, meaning you have like the first two about public and private domain refer to, more of biblical Reshuyot. The Karmelit is a special rabbinic designation for an area that doesn't fit neatly into what is a Reshut HaRabim or Reshut HaYachid. And then you also have something called a Makom Pitur, which is an area fewer than 4x4 tefachim and higher than 3 tefachim from the ground, and that's considered like free base. Anyone remember playing tag on Shabbos? You always had like a place that was free, like home base that was free, you can't be tagged there. That's what Makom Pitur is. For whether or not it meets the dimensions, a good way to think of it is, say, your typical mailbox, right? I know the dimensions are off, but think of something mailbox-ish. Just trust me. Mailbox, again, I'm trying to give a visual aid that people might be familiar with. Something on top of a mailbox. So how do these rishiyot, how do these domain get defined? And what is the importance for them regarding the laws of carrying? So first, regarding Reshut HaRabim, according to Rambam, his requirements are, you need a road that's at least 16 amot wide, roughly 28 feet, no roof, meaning it is uncovered. And by roof, it doesn't mean you're part of a building. Some of people here, when you come to shul, go under Delancey Street, where it becomes the Williamsburg Bridge. That area that's under the Williamsburg Bridge is not a public domain by the simple fact that it's covered. Is it technically a roof? Normally we associate roof with walls, right? But it's a covered area. So minimally that area underneath it is not a public domain. And an area that has fewer than three walls. Even though Rambam doesn't mention this as a criteria, it's important to say now, there are those who are of the opinion that an additional requirement for having a public domain is 600,000 either Jews or people. We discussed exactly, you know, where that came from in greater detail in the laws of Erevin Shiur. At least according to Rambam, that's not a criteria. Largely because when the Gemara in Shabbat 6a asks, what is a Rishut Tarabim, 600,000 is never mentioned. Also an interesting, as far as I know, based on what I know of the archaeology, it would have been impossible, not impossible, but there was no place that had 600,000 Jews in antiquity in a small confined area, such that you've got a lot of laws that are regarding laws of damages about public domain and private domain, where 600,000 just doesn't enter into it. And while some might want to say there's a distinction between a public domain for Shabbat and a public domain for damages, unless you can actually provide a rabbinic source to justify that distinction, you're pretty much making it up. I don't care who you are. Like, that has to be justified. Terms mean what they say. And if you want to say there's a different, and sometimes the Gemara does that. They say, like, a certain term for one halacha is different than another halacha. But you have to provide evidence to support that proposition. All right. The Rishut Yachid, the private domain, is an area of 4x4 tefachim, surrounded by walls, divisions of 10 tefachim in height, which, again, there's a huge argument over how much is a tefach. Let's say, for the sake of argument, 40 inches, and someone actually lives there. Well, I'm going to say someone actually lives there, because you also have something called a carmelite, which is something that doesn't have Rishut Harabim or Rishut Yachid, such that it doesn't have a road cutting through it, or it might be just an expansive area that doesn't have surrounding walls. So here would be an example. Anyone here live out in a farm? You lived out in a farm?
In rural Connecticut, yeah.
Okay, no, that's... So people here know what a giant corral is. So you're talking about a large fenced-in area where cattle grazes. Now, let's say, assuming it's not attached to a house, right? Because there would be a difference between a large fence. If it's attached to the house, and consider who kafla dira, its connection, it's like having a fenced-in backyard. And then, in which case, it would be an extension of the private domain. But let's say, you know, your barn's a, you know, good furlong away. I have no idea what a furlong is, so I just came to me. So let's say it's a good furlong away. You've got a fenced-in area that's surrounded on all sides. So that would mean it's not a public domain. On the other hand, no one's actually living there, right? So that would be a carpet. That would be a, it's called a carpet, and has the halachic status of a carmelite. Here's why these things are important. Within your own private domain, you are allowed to carry stuff. I'm sure that comes as a huge relief to people, right? Otherwise, Shabbat would get really, really awkward. In a public domain, you are not allowed to carry more than 4 amot. Okay? Then the other issue is going from one domain to another domain, in that you are not allowed to do that. You are not allowed to carry from a public domain to a private domain, or a private domain to a public domain. If you do that, you violate biblical Shabbat. Make sense so far? The Carmelite, being of its rabbinic status, has additional requirement. Well, it's in some way stricter than the others, such that, like the public domain, if you're not allowed to carry 4 amot in there under rabbinic law. Additionally, you're not allowed to go from a private domain to a Carmelite or a public domain to a Carmelite and vice versa. Again, as a matter of rabbinic law. You all got that so far? Okay. Not too complicated right there. One way that, you know, if people can get around these issues is through the creation of an Eruv, which, again, we're not going to go into the details, but the super-duper short version is, if you have an expansive area, one thing you would need to do is called a tikkun. You would have to set up a physical fixing of the area to negate it from being a reshut harabim. So one example would be putting up walls around an area. The other is getting all of these private domains coalesced together to make a whole bunch of private domains one big private domain. And that enables you to carry from one private domain to another private domain. Right? When you get to issues of shared space, that gets a little more complicated. Technically, would it be a Carmelite? Because, it's like a hallway in an apartment building. You don't own, that gets it a little bit more complicated, as you can understand, because you have joint ownership. It's not a fully private space, but you're also not going to call it a public space either. It's a shared space. So, you know, Eruvin are needed to allow people to count in those shared spaces. Right? Again, for the details about how the Eruv work, I refer people to that class. But at least right off the bat, understand these are the major rishiyot. Oh, I almost forgot Makom Petur because it's so easy to forget. Makom Petur being that home base is, you're allowed to put anything on it or take stuff off of it. Because it's considered its own little independent area. So, in theory, and this can come up sometimes, people find that they carry something on Shabbat. Again, we have a few weeks to go into the details here. And some questions are, well, what are you supposed to do? So one possibility that people might give as instruction is, well, if you're close, and let's say you're in a public domain, right? We're not going to get into fights over what parts are and what parts aren't. Let's assume you're in a public domain. See, well, hey, am I within 4 amot of a mailbox? If you're within 4 amot of a mailbox, well, we'll put, put it on the mailbox. If you're not, and you walk the 4 amot, you got trouble, right? But it would be like one strategy or something mailbox-like, okay? So those are the 4 domains. Those are the halachot in terms of what is biblical versus what is rabbinic. Are we all okay so far? Any questions?
Two, actually. First, someone could travel fewer than 4 amos, go between Rishis HaYachid and Rishis HaRabim, and be over. Yes?
Correct.
Okay.
To explain that, for the people who didn't catch the Hebrew lingo, if I'm on the actual boundary line, and I carry, it might be a foot, right? People will fight over what an amma is, but a foot is certainly less than 4 amot. By me going 1 foot from a public domain to a private domain, I have violated biblical Shabbat of carrying. Assuming, of course, I'm carrying an object. If you're not carrying, it's fine.
The other thing?
Yeah.
Could 600,000 have anything to do with the number of males in the desert?
That's exactly what it has to do with it. All right, so to give a really short summary about where the 600,000 came from, there's a Gemara that says that the Midbar, the wilderness, was only a Reshut HaRabim, a public domain, when the Jewish people were there. So there's the opinion of the Baha'i, which said, oh, well, the only thing that made it a public domain then was that you had 600,000 people living there. And so we'll say, oh, therefore, it must be 600,000 today. The only problem with that opinion is that nowhere in the Gemara is 600,000 explicitly mentioned as it, meaning there's an extrapolation that's made that is uncorroborated in the Gemara. You might recall Rabbi Howard Jachter wrote a series of books called Gray Matter, and in one of the volumes where he discusses Eruvin, he cites Rav Aaron Lichtenstein of Gush as saying, that opinion is the most difficult one in all of Rishonim. To say that 600,000 is required for a public domain. Again, the Gemara never said that as a requirement. Now, today, it is a huge, huge leniency. Because, well, some will say you need 600,000 people, some will say you specifically need 600,000 Jews. How do you define it? Do you define it by residents? Do you define it by people passing through? These are questions that came up in Brooklyn. What do you do with King's Highway? And you had people who study traffic patterns, right? In fact, you're trying to guess, well, how many people do you average in a car? How many cars travel through? That's how people try to sort all this stuff out, right? Yeah.
So, follow-up, which is that there wasn't... The 600,000 count was only males between 20 and 80 in the desert.
Yeah.
So, I mean... What was the reality?
Are you saying that an invented criteria isn't entirely consistent?
No.
Shocking.
Well,
absolutely shocking.
No, obviously. But
listen, I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot that's written about this, and people will probably address those. However, again, this is an area that a lot of people don't want to look too closely in, because relying on this criteria of 600,000 Jews requiring for a public domain, many areas aren't going to meet that criteria. Once it doesn't meet that criteria, life becomes a whole lot easier, both in terms of fixing it, in terms of how a whole lot of other things work in terms of Erevin. So it's one of those things that, someone said it, keeps getting repeated, people just believe it. And depending on how, your halachic system works, either you say, well, everyone does it, so therefore it's legitimate, or this still is irrational. Like, this isn't what Chazal set it up as. Right? Again, it's a huge criteria specifically regarding Erevin, which we discussed, again in the Erevin Shirim. But, I can say this, since this is a class in Rambam, Rambam doesn't list it, right? And it's not surprising that Rambam doesn't list it, because when the Gemara lists the criteria for what counts as a Rishus HaRabim, it doesn't mention 600,000. Oh, so what do you do with that Gemara? You could probably argue that it only makes sense to have a public domain when there are actually people there. Normal people don't, normally you don't have major nations that set up shop in a desert. Right? You've got, maybe the Druze, nomads who wander around. But when you have a whole nation that decides to camp out, right, without them, you just have vast, wide open spaces. Large chunks of Nebraska. When I flew through there, I was a couple of weeks ago, I did the drive from Birmingham, Alabama to Nashville, which is a gorgeous drive, mind you. There's a lot of uninhabited space there, but it only makes sense to say it's a public domain if there are, humans. A fun fact, Rabbi Eitan Yammer, who was driving me down, pointed out that land there is so cheap that sometimes it's easier for people to just abandon their house and go elsewhere than to bother fixing it up. Because, again, lots of huge, huge space. To say that 600,000, I understand where someone might make that conclusion, but given that this is one of those things my father would say, the difference between a necessary read and a plausible read. It's interesting speculation, but once you start posketing based on that speculation, adding on a criteria that the Gemara does not mention explicitly, that's a huge stretch. But, according to many people, as long as it was done a long time ago and we've kept it up, then it becomes part of our religion. But that's a rant for others here. Okay. Next question that'll come up, not often here, is what constitutes carrying? So there are two main things, and this is going to be something that we're going to elaborate on in great deal. Right now, we've discussed the areas of carrying. Other things that are important components. Because remember, a lot of things that the Rambam is discussing here is the shi'ur. What is the amount that you need to do to transgress carrying? To transgress any melacha. Right? So we said things for fire, it's any amount. For things like writing, it's two letters, for biblical at least. Right? When you come to carrying, there are three areas that need to be defined. I probably should have led with that. Sorry. One is the domains. Two, what is considered the physical act of carrying, and three, the object. Meaning, you're going to have different laws regarding carrying depending on what the object you're carrying is. Okay? So, we're not going to do that third one at all. We'll just introduce the second component today. And that is the physical act of carrying. So we'll just start this off. And it is really simple. There are two things that you need to violate carrying. Anyone know what those are?
Holding and walking?
Not exactly. No. Picking something up, putting something down. In Hebrew, the terms are called akira and hanacha. No relation to the anime.
I just unpacked that box. I have the whole series. And that's what I was doing.
I love this show sometimes. Rebecca's like, hold it. Stop. Yeah. Stop. Akira and Hanacha. Picking something up and putting something down. Right? That is the act of carrying. Now, Dana mentioned stopping, which is correct. But that's considered hanacha. If I'm carrying something in my pocket, so I had to pick it up to put it in my pocket, right? As I'm walking, I am carrying it. When I stop, it is as if I put it down. Make sense? Relative sense?
Yeah.
Given that it's halacha, you seem troubled.
Theoretically, somebody could run a relay race, hand something off to somebody and never.
So we discussed that. So we're going to go get into those details, but you remember that we actually saw examples of those way at the beginning when we were discussing joint participation in a malacha. Two people who do the carrying, whether it's one, that is a phenomenal point there, meaning one person versus two people. Yes, 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 and we will get to those in greater detail. But first it's important, the Gemara actually has a whole bunch of examples about, well, how do you work, which, you know, if you're reading it, you think like, wow, this is really stupid. The sages had nothing else to do other than come up with these wacky scenarios. But that's how you understand law, meaning you come up with these examples to understand the law, not that anyone in their right mind is going to actually do it. However, and this is something which is important for, you know, at least for today that we'll repeat, you know, as I keep saying, knowing the difference between rabbinic and biblical violations of Shabbat are so important, especially when it comes to carrying. Because if you're going to get stuck, you can know tricks to be mima'it bi'isur, to minimize the transgressions, or in some ways even double up. So just to give one example that we'll revisit. Rav Moshe Feinstein, I know I'm quoting Rav Moshe in a Rambam class, has a response. If anyone's interested, please let me know. I don't remember the number offhand. I can promise you I haven't made this up. Discusses the issue of carrying a kid to Shabbat, to shul on Shabbat. There is a principle in Jewish law. Pull it off the shelf. So first off, Dana is looking up a book called the Yad Moshe. Hold it up for everyone. This is one of the most useful books that you're going to find. Personally, as a geek, I don't just like information. Knowing where to get the information you need is sometimes more useful than having the books on your shelves. The Yad Moshe is an index to the Igrot Moshe, the halachic writings of Rav Moshe Feinstein. And it is a wonderful, wonderful index. I know librarians have remarkably strong opinions on what makes a good index. The reason why I think it's a wonderful index is normally I can use it to find what I'm looking for. And he's incredibly thorough. So one of the things that he does in particular is when Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, sometimes he will have a lot of different, he'll have sections, I guess. And sometimes he'll talk about a lot of different things in one responsa. Come on out so Sam can actually go back to sitting normally. Yeah. Thank you. So what the Yad Moshe will actually do is he will tell you, here's the citation, meaning like where you would find it, but it'll also give you the actual page in the published version. And it could just be a throwaway line or two that might discuss something of relevance to that topic that he's going to include. So anyone who's interested, certainly in Rav Moshe Feinstein, thank you, which anyone who studies halacha, you know, whether or not someone listens to everything that he says, usually a good idea to at least know what Rav Moshe Feinstein says, see if he wrote anything on it. Yad Moshe is really indispensable. So anyone who's into that sort of thing, pick it up. Yeah, sorry. The reason, no, because that's Orachai. Yeah, they're different things. They're from Orachai and Yerida.
Oh.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Okay, listen, I was able to talk about the Yad Moshe. Great book. Again, anyone who wants it inside, please send me an email. It goes like this. There's a principle that we'll see later called Chai Nosei Et Atzmo. A living being is considered as carrying themselves. Using the definition of Shulchan Aruch, what it means about carrying themselves is, let's say you have a kid who can take a full step on his own, meaning pick up, like, take a step forward and bring the back foot up, right? That's considered as the kid can know how to walk. Once that kid knows how to walk, comes under the category of Chai Nosei Et Atzmo, such that carrying that child, which I will describe right now as an object, is no longer a biblical object of carrying, it becomes rabbinic. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, let's you have an area that's a Carmelite, right? Again, we're not going to argue over what's a Reshut HaRabim or Carmelite right now, but let's say there's an area that's a Carmelite. In that area, it is rabbinically forbidden to carry, right? But let's say the object that you're carrying is rabbinically prohibited to carry. Those two rabbinic prohibitions stack up such that it becomes a trade derabanan and is therefore permissible. Someone in the shul actually asked me that you've pointed out that the Mishnah Berurah actually says they don't stack up. Said, nice that he says that. You should know Rav Moshe Feinstein happens to disagree. Rav Moshe Feinstein, oddly enough, says he doesn't say it universally. He says it, if I'm remembering correctly, for a mitzvah, such as saying Kaddish, which I found fascinating because there's no actual mitzvah to say Kaddish. So I think it was his way of saying, like, not to just do it stam, but also recognizing that, you know, it's not just so clear litzorech mitzvah. Certainly, like, if there's a kid who's walking in the middle of the street, like, you don't want the kid to get injured. Or let's say you've got a kid who, you know, apparently I've been told two-year-olds throw tantrums every now and again. So let's say a kid just sits on the sidewalk and starts crying. Assuming you live in a Carmelite, as I understand it, you'd be allowed to carry that child home, assuming that kid can actually take a full step, which most two-year-olds I know have learned to walk by then, barring, you know, some other disability. All right? Any thoughts on that? Right. So that's an example of stacking rabbinic laws such that you have a trade derabanan where the physical act of carrying that you're doing, you know, while you might be having, how to put this, you've got the act that you're carrying might be biblical and that you're picking up and you're putting down and you're doing that normally. The object is rabbinic. The area is rabbinic. Therefore, it becomes rabbinic. You would need all three of those categories to fit in order for it to be biblical. So in a normal scenario, and again, this is what happens most often, if, you know, I take, you know, my house keys, put it in my pocket before I go out, I walk, you know, Reshut HaRabim, that right there is a problem, right? That's biblical. That's the act is carrying is biblical. The way that I'm carrying constitutes a biblical act of carrying. The object would be something that it's considered a biblical object of carrying, and the territory that I'm traversing would constitute a biblical prohibition. Once you start taking those things away, you have a little more latitude to play with. And we're going to discuss a bunch of these examples down the road, even as we go through the Rambam a little bit, you know, out of order as the Rambam wrote. But I think it's important to get these components down initially so that when we see the Rambam inside, we'll understand what he's saying. Because for some of them, you have, like, Last year, a non-Jewish friend of mine sends me an email asking what's a Rishus HaRabim, which is a really weird question to get from a non-Jew. She was reading some, you know, I think it was a Yiddish policeman's ball or something like that. It's like, oh, so I'm like, I actually went through it, but unless you actually know what a Rishus HaRabim is, right, you're using terms that still have to be defined at some place. It's a bit tricky, but we'll go through this slowly. So we'll spend a few weeks on this. Again, not too much in detail. And then we'll move on to the other stuff. All right? Yeah.
Theoretically, if you pick something up before Shabbat starts or put it down after?
It's interesting. So that's a fascinating question. So let's say it's like the boundary. It gets a little bit tricky there because it's not like, for the area right before and after Shabbat, there's a rabbinic area too, where things get prohibited. Sorry about that, especially if you're listening. I just blew my nose into a microphone. That's probably not pleasant. I believe we're going to get to that. All right. And I think we actually might have seen some examples of that, too, about starting a malacha before Shabbat and having it end on Shabbat and afterwards, too. So we're going to get into that. All right? Fantastic. So hopefully see you all next week, and hopefully I will be a whole lot better. Have a great one, and happy Mother's Day, if that's what you're into. Be well.